Welcome to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. When was the last time you made a bet with a coworker, a spouse, a friend, that they were totally wrong about something and you were totally right? And then somehow you were wrong, even though you were so sure. Kind of like the poor saps who regularly get cornered on Jimmy Kimmel.
What was your reaction when you heard that President Obama was going to be having a sleepover with Kim Jong-un?
Oh, wow. I remember that. It was pretty funny. I was just really surprised, and I saw some pictures earlier, and so I thought that was interesting.
What were the pictures like?
They were just, like, in bed together, and they were having a lot of fun. Yeah.
They watched a movie on Netflix, right?
Yeah, I think they watched Titanic. I'm not sure. That's what I saw on Twitter.
David Denning studies what we don't know and why we often don't know that we don't know it. He's a professor at Cornell and the author of the recent article, We Are All Confident Idiots, in Pacific Standard Magazine, which we will link to on our website, innovationhub.org. David, thanks for your time.
My pleasure.
So you have done research in the lab that isn't too different from this Jimmy Kimmel bit. Why? What were you trying to figure out?
Well, we're interested in when people don't recognize that they really don't know anything about something. And so we want to look at situations where we know with certainty that this person knows nothing about what they're talking about. So what we'll do is we'll ask people about fictitious concepts or ideas or places or people that don't exist. And what we find is what Jay Leno or Jimmy Kimmel in his Light Witness News a bit finds is that people are quite ready to start talking about things that they can't possibly know anything about because we made up that thing in our office just a few weeks before.
Be concrete here. What kinds of things are you asking people that they don't know about but they think they know about?
Well, we might ask them, for example, about concepts in physics. So we'll ask them, do you recognize or do you know anything about things that exist, like photons? And then we'll mention things that don't exist, like the plates of parallax. And what we'll find is if we have three non-things embedded in a survey, 90% of people will claim knowledge of at least one of them. Now, it can be concepts in physics, concepts in biology. It can be politicians. We have a lot of people who claim knowledge of the politician Michael Merrington, even though he's a person, as far as we know, we've just made up in the laboratory. And also cities in the United States. They'll say, yeah, I've heard of that city, when in fact we've looked at the map, that city does not exist.
Now, is that a little bit of a magical formula when you put something fake and sandwich it in with a whole bunch of real stuff? Does that make people more likely to say, well, I know that most of this stuff is real, so Michael Merrington, like, he's got to be a real person because, John Boehner's a real person.
There's some of that going on. That is, it's clear whenever we're talking to other people, we just have to assume that what they're asking us is reasonable. Because what if we questioned every question that was asked of us? That would make conversation very hard. But the other thing that we're finding is that people don't necessarily exactly directly know what they know versus what they don't know. They infer what they know versus what they don't know from, let's say, pre-existing notions they have about themselves. So if a person thinks they're pretty politically savvy, they'll think they know Michael Merrington because that's an inference that they know Michael Merrington. It's not a direct answer that they know Michael Merrington. Rather, they're inferring that they must know that person.
So does that tell you that more knowledgeable people are the most likely to overestimate their knowledge because they assume, gee, I know most of the politicians on this test are real. John Boehner's real. Harry Reid is real. So I'm going to infer that everybody's real.
Well, in fact, what we find is we find two separate things. First, the thought that you're an expert makes you believe that you know things that don't exist. But also actual competence makes you think you know things that don't exist. So, for example, we just did a study in my psychology and law class where we surveyed people at the beginning of the class and surveyed people at the last day of the class. And we asked them, do you know these concepts? And there are a lot of psych and law concepts. including some that don't exist or never talked about in class. Well, by the time you get to the end of class and ask people, do you know these concepts or have you heard of these concepts, a lot of people say yes to the things they've heard about. That's terrific. But they also say yes to a lot of things we never mentioned in class, which leads me to conclude that I'm such a great teacher that not only do I make people learn things that we actually discussed in class, I made them learn things, or at least they believe they learned things that we actually never touched upon in class.
What is the science behind this? Like, what is the rationale for people thinking they know more than they do? I mean, like, what's the evolutionary reason? How does that help us?
Well, this is the science of metacognition. Psychologists will differentiate between cognition, which is coming to a conclusion or a judgment or a decision, and metacognition, which is in part the evaluation of that conclusion. Is it a good conclusion or is it a conclusion you should hedge about? Now, in terms of evolution, it's unclear in some sense whether this is a facility that we've evolved or if this turns out to be the problem that evolution hasn't successfully tackled yet.
I see.
That is, there is a reason to believe that, well, at times we are going to make mistakes and claim knowledge of things we have no knowledge of. And that's simply because what we are is we're inveterate storytellers, we're inveterate explainers, we're inveterate theory inventors. That is, we see something out there in the world and we try to explain why it's happening.
When you've looked at this sort of people being way overconfident, that getting them into trouble, have you noticed big differences? Are there differences, for example, between women and men, between older people and younger people? I mean, are there groups where you see gaps?
One thing that has been looked at is gender, being male versus female. And what the research suggests is that there isn't a gender gap, but there are gender gaps. There are some things in the world that are just really male-identified. In contemporary society, math and science, for example, still male-identified. And what we find is men think much more of their scientific talent than women think of their scientific talent. In fact, when we've done tests in the lab, we find women underestimate how well they're doing on quizzes that we give them on scientific knowledge. But if you move from science and math to things that are more neutral or things that are more female identified, such as the humanities, for example, English, comparative literature, what you find is that this gender difference goes away or it even flips. It reverses and it becomes the women who are more confident in themselves than the men. So gender matters, but it also matters what specific skill or what specific expertise you're talking about.
Do you see changes over time? I mean, the media has given a fair amount of attention to polls that show that over the past 50 or 60 years, American kids will say, I'm special. I have high self-esteem at increasing numbers. So does their confidence in their abilities also go up?
One of the things I think is interesting, and we are exploring right now, is there is an international test of math and science that's given to fourth and eighth graders every 4 years or so. This is called the TIMSS. And if you take a look at a country-by-country basis, what you find is there's an actual negative relationship between how well the students in that country think they've done on these tests and how well they've actually done. So the students in those countries that do the best, those students think they've done the worst compared to all the other countries. And the students that think they've really bombed on the test actually are doing the best relative to everybody else.
Okay, well, you've got to explain that to me. How is it that the kids who are the smartest in some ways are like, yeah, gee, I don't know, and the reverse of that?
Well, there are a number of possibilities of what could be going on. One thing could be how much education they actually have in math and science and what they're being introduced to. So it's the kids who are doing the best who are introduced to all the hard stuff. And if you're introduced to all the hard stuff, you can decide that, gee, this is hard and I'm not very good at it.
Right.
However, if you're not introduced to the hard stuff, you're not going to do as well relative to kids in other countries. But you're going to think that you're doing splendidly because, gee, everything has been easy so far. And yes, in fact, everything you've been exposed to has been easy so far. So that's one potential explanation for what's going on. But this negative relationship between how well the students think they're doing in math and science across countries and how well they're actually doing is one of the most striking findings I've ever seen pop up on my computer screen.
That's incredible. So do you think, as you look at the trajectory of this with young people, Do you think technology is making us smarter? Do you think it's just making us more confident? What's happening?
Well, one thing to mention is actually there is some evidence, a little contentious, that we are actually the world over getting smarter decade by decade, that IQ has been going up 3 points every decade since, let's say, around 1900. So the overall picture might be good, but it depends on how much you believe in the tests that are being used to measure intelligence. Mm-hmm. There's some contention about that. I think with all this information and I think with all this technology, what we might find is it might not push people up or might not push people down per se, is that it pushes people all over the place, so there's more variability. Some people take advantage of what's out there or that technology is given to them, and they use it to their benefit, whereas other people might not use that technology or never have that technology being given to them, so they don't have the opportunities. So my guess, my first guess would be that the effect of technology is to make everybody more variable.
So wait, does that mean smart people are getting smarter and people who don't know much are getting less smart?
That might be the case. One of the reasons we believe that is that smart people actually seem to be better at recognizing what's smart out there in the world. So when they see something that's smart, they go, that's smart, and they incorporate it in. Whereas people without the skill don't recognize what's smart. They don't recognize what's misleading. And as a consequence, they just can't take advantage of information that's out there in the world because they simply don't have the intellectual scaffolding, if you will, to be able to take advantage of it.
Okay, so I read all this research. I realize I must be overconfident all the time. This is a serious problem. What do I do? You know, what's your suggestion? What do I do to try to avoid this trap of being overconfident about things I really have no right to be overconfident about?
Well, I think one thing to do is to monitor when you might be in a situation where this really matters more than in other situations. And an area in which being overconfident can be more of a problem is when you're doing something new. So you're moving to a new language or to a new country. There are probably situations you don't know about or things you don't know about that could get you into trouble and that are going to leave you overconfident. So, for example, whenever I travel to a country I've never been to before, I go to the books to find out, okay, what hand gestures do I not make? Because a hand gesture a hand gesture in the United States that might be A-okay, and that's literally one of the hand gestures that matters, might actually indicate something obscene. And you don't want to be like President Nixon when he was still vice president, who went to Brazil and flashed the AOK symbol to Brazilians, not realizing that that was a symbol for something quite obscene.
Yikes.
So the first thing to prepare for is things that are new. And by the way, what that also means is prepare for things that are significant, because significant decisions are often the ones we don't come across very often in our lives, and so we're very likely to be potentially overconfident. So that means buying a house, buying a car, being married, having a child. We don't do this week in, week out.
Right.
And so when we're reaching those significant decisions, it does pay to do some research and to do some due diligence about what are pitfalls to avoid or what are signs that things are looking good versus things are looking dangerous.
David Dunning wrote the article, "We Are All Confident Idiots." It's in Pacific Standard Magazine. We'll link to it on our website, innovationhub.org. And he's a professor of psychology at Cornell. Thank you very much for coming in and talking about this.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Let them bring on all their problems. I'll do better than my best. I have confidence they'll put me to the test. For